Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. My guest today is Mary Carter, who has just released her third book, Sunnyside Blues. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Maybe we could start with a little background information. Who is Mary Carter, and when and what motivated you to become a writer?
I started out my career as an actress. But even as a child, I was always writing, and I kind of thought that was normal. I thought everybody wrote stories all the time and got good grades in school, but I didn't show my writing to people other than friends and family. And when I was an actress and waiting tables, I also tried my hand at writing plays, and I had some luck with that. And in fact, I had a play reading done in Rochester, New York, and that was going well, but at some point, my sister is a screenwriter, and she also had some luck selling some screenplays. And she showed one of my plays to her agent, who said, you know, you have a similar voice. Why doesn't your sister try writing a screenplay? So I actually tried a screenplay first and found that very challenging, and I really didn't know enough about the format. The format for screenwriting is really strict. And my sister had had, you know, college and tons of classes and reading tons of scripts her whole life, and I had not. So I kind of was sent back to the drawing board, and I put down the screenplay, and it had taken so much out of me, and I thought, well, what do I know about? And I'm an avid reader. I read novels all the time, and I thought, well, why don't I just try writing a novel? And that was actually a New Year's goal for myself. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to get published. It was just, I won't regret it if I say at the end of my life I wrote a novel. So I did that, although the first year I struggled really hard with it. I took a writing course that kind of helped me along. And by the end of that first New Year's, I had not completed it. So the second New Year's goal was to finish the novel. Well, I finished it in September of that next year, and then I showed it to friends of mine who were either avid readers or writers themselves to get feedback. And the feedback was really positive. So I thought, what the heck? I got a hold of the Literary Marketplace book for writers, and I started looking for an agent. And that's actually how I got my agent, my first agent anyway. And that was my first novel. It's called She'll Take It. It was kind of a humorous look at a kleptomaniac in New York City who falls in love with a lawyer who prosecutes shoplifters. And I was just amazed that I got an agent, and 4 weeks later, he sold it to Kensington. And I've been with Kensington ever since.
You are very, very lucky.
I know. People hate me. People really hate me. And I feel bad because I paid my dues as an actress with so many rejections and so much failure. But the other thing I do have to say about that, I do think I was very lucky. I will not argue with that. But I also really worked on the novel, the manuscript. And I listened to the feedback I got from friends. And I did tons of drafts of it. And I followed the instructions to a T, like only send it to agents who are looking for your type of genre, how to format the manuscript, to make sure the manuscript is complete so that if an agent wants to see the rest of it, normally if they're interested in your pitch, they'll request the first 50 pages. And then
right.
If they like the first 50 pages, they'll say, let me see the rest of it. Well, I've heard horror stories of authors that don't have the rest of it, and then they're stuck. So whereas I was lucky, I also played by the rules, and I also made sure that I had a manuscript that I could really stand behind, that I felt was ready for that kind of, you know, rejection if it were to come.
My wife and I have a friend who is a stand-up comic, a guy by the name of Ian Coburn, and he wrote a tremendously amusing book about, 2 years ago, I guess it was. It took him, I think he said, 6 months to actually write the book, and it's, you know, just a humor book. And it took him another 6 months to realize that it was absolutely impossible to find either an agent or a a publisher. But, you know, being a stand-up comedian, he made the best of the rejection letters and used them to decorate his office.
Yes, I've heard of this. I've heard of people decorating their bathrooms, too, which maybe is more appropriate.
Right. Actually, Ian's solution was to create his own publishing company.
That's another way.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty unique. I was lucky enough to get a sneak preview of Sunnyside Blues. When does it actually hit the streets?
It comes out July 1st, although usually bookstores will have it a week before that date. Amazon's saying it's ready by June 30th. Technically, the date's July 1st. That'll hit the bookstores.
I have to admit that Sunnyside Blues was not exactly what I was expecting. It's a million miles away from your second book, Accidentally Engaged. Accidentally Engaged was done in what I would call the British farce style, a very funny and fast-paced romp. Sunnyside Blues, on the other hand, is a much more somber and somewhat dark look at the human spirit. Why the big change?
Well, my agent, or my editor, actually, and I had a talk after Accidentally Engaged came out. And part of it was that, you know, publishing goes through trends. And my first two books, at least as far as Kensington were concerned, were in the chick lit genre. You know, it kind of became popular with Bridget Jones' Diary and certain books hitting the bookshelf like that. And for a while, Chick Lit was selling really well and was really popular. About the time She'll Take It, my first one, was published, Chick Lit was starting to wane. There weren't as many people buying or interested in buying Chick Lit. And that continued even with Accidentally Engaged. So I was happy because I was ready to move on to something different. I didn't want to write a million books about a single woman looking for love. I wanted to grow as a writer. I wanted to deepen as a writer. And luckily it coincided exactly what my publisher was thinking. And he said, you know, I'd like you to try to write more of women's fiction. And so we had this discussion, and it was just what I was thinking as well. So it was a chance for me to, you know, broaden as a writer, and it's also a chance to see, you know, how that will sell, since they are a business. You know, they think like businessmen. They are not really concerned about your artistic vision. Not that they, you know, squash it. They certainly support whatever they can. But first and foremost, they have to think, what do they think they can market and what do they think they can sell? And I think women, the category I'm in now is women's fiction, a little bit broader, and hopefully that will bring in more readers than I had for my first two books.
Where did the idea for Sunnyside Blues come from, and how long did it take you to put it together?
You know, what's funny, and I should start writing this down. People love to know where ideas come from, and to be honest, sometimes I would love to know myself, because by the time I'm done with a book, I often forget what the original spark even was. But I do try to start with a character, you know, that wants something, that's in trouble, that's in search of something. I picked the setting of Sunnyside, Queens, because I was moving to Sunnyside, Queens from Manhattan, and I thought, oh, this is perfect. I'll just use the setting of my new little hometown. And, you know, I knew I had a character, girl in search of something. And I had some things, you know, some people I knew from my past, some settings from my past I knew I wanted to bring in. But I think the point I want to stress is because people often say, oh, is this character this person or that person, and whereas you put together pieces, obviously, of yourself, of your life, into a character, into a plot, that might help spark the original idea, but truly, and I can't say this enough, truly by the time the book is finished, they have taken on a life of their own, a background of their own, and what may have started and sparked the original idea, you're now so far removed from it by the time the book is done because it's become its own thing, its own life. So I start with a spark usually, and then by the time it's done, you know, it just, if you're lucky, if you keep at it, the creative process takes over and the idea becomes more developed, more fleshed, you know, with each day that you work on it.
Yeah, I have to admit, as a writer myself, albeit not of books, that I'll sit down with an idea for an article, but after 300 or 400 words, you can see that the article's going in a direction that you had never even conceived of.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Obviously, readership is a little limited at the moment, seeing as it's not available on the market yet. But what sort of feedback are you getting about this new book?
I'm really happy. So far from the, thank goodness for bloggers, from the book bloggers and book reviewers, I've had really positive feedback saying, you know, I've had people, one woman said the book for her was like a runaway train. People that are saying, you know, it's a book that once they pick it up, they want to finish it. I've had numerous people, there's a little bit of a mystery in the book, and a lot of people said, well, I never saw that ending coming. I didn't know that was the person, you know, behind this. So that's been great and helpful. And, you know, I'm still waiting. Romantic Times surprised me by giving it a really good review and a 4-star, where, as you know, I mean, the romance is not the primary, you know, gist of the book. So I was a little bit nervous when I heard that my publisher had sent it to Romantic Times. It's not your typical romance. So I was really pleased that they were able to, you know, see the book for itself and give it a good review as well. And that's always a little scary, waiting for reviews to come out. And, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion, but it's definitely good to get people that, you know, at least give you a fair shake at it.
I'm not going to spoil the plot, so anyone listening, you're just going to have to go out and buy the book. But the mystery that you mentioned, was that in the back of your mind when you started, or was that something that just came along as you were writing?
It came along after I had started the book, but it came along pretty quickly. Although it didn't come as quickly to me, the complete answers to the mystery. I knew I had this subplot going on, and I knew it fed into the larger story. But it took me quite a while, even for myself, to figure out exactly who was going to be behind it and how it was all going to fit in. But the idea of it came in pretty quickly after I started.
Presumably, people can pre-order copies. Where should they go?
Yes, they can definitely pre-order either on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. If you're not already a member of Barnes & Noble where you get the 10% discount, I think right now for pre-order it's a little bit cheaper on Amazon. If you are a member and you have that 10% discount card in Barnes & Noble, then I think right now they're both running at a discount that would be like $5 off of the price when it's going to be actually released at the end of the month. So now's the time.
Right. I was talking to a Canadian author a couple of months ago, a very funny guy, actually, and he made a comment that gave me pause for thought. He said, you know, everyone has a book in them, but the real test is, do they have more than one book? This is your third book. Does writing become easier or more difficult as you go along?
It was such a surprise to me. I really thought that once I had the first one done, the rest would just flow out. each book is just as hard as the last, or maybe even more difficult, which is frustrating. And I remember going to a book signing, and I said to the author, I think his name's Stephen Perlman, he had a book out called The 7 Levels of Ambiguity, and I really enjoyed the book, and I said, He asked me, I wasn't going to promote myself, but he said, are you a writer too? I don't know what prompted him to ask me, but he did, and accidentally engaged. I was in the middle of writing it, and I said, yes, I'm on my second book, but I find it just as hard as the first book. I thought it would be easier. And he really helped me out because he said, well, it's good news, bad news. He said, you're going to feel that way with every book. He said, you're going to feel like, you know, you're adrift in the middle of the ocean. How are you ever going to get to land? And he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you are going to feel like that every single book. And it has been the best thing that anybody has ever said to me, because the second one was hard, the third one was hard, and I'm working on a fourth one right now that's due in August, and I'll be hitting the third draft of revisions next week. And I'm finding it terrifying and hard. But those times where I think, I'm done, you know, I have no more books in me, I'll never be able to finish this, I just remember his words, and I read a lot of books on writing, and you hear from other writers how hard it is and how everybody doubts themselves in the middle of the process. And I think as long as you know that, then you're okay, then you're not so frightened. You're like, this is just part of the creative process. It is hard. It's always hard. And it's a craft. It takes work. It's not going to just flow from your fingertips. Writers aren't just these inspired people who walk around with this gift that they can, you know, summon at will. It is something that takes a lot of perseverance and hard work, unfortunately. I wish it were easier. I really do.
I have a slightly more jaded view of the whole industry. I can't remember the last time I read a New York Times bestseller. To me, the John Grissoms and Tom Clancy's of the world just churn out more of the same. They're boring writers. I much prefer people with fresh ideas. Do you read the top 10 list at all?
I wish I had. I should have. I do from time to time, but no, I'm sorry, I didn't. But I see, when I do read the top 10 list, I'm not surprised what's on them. And you're right, there's, you know, a lot of it are the commercial fiction, popular books. And, you know, I certainly read some of them from time to time and think they're great. But I do think that sometimes a fair shake's not given to newer writers. And again, it comes back to being, it's a business. So booksellers put the books on the front tables that are true bestsellers, and the rest of the books are shoved, you know, back somewhere in the shelves. Although luckily, I think, you know, in today's age with blogs and technology and things like that, that there are readers out there who want different books and different things, and hopefully there's room for all of us, you know, to be sure. But that publishing industry is, I can't stress it enough, it's a business, and they're not necessarily looking for what's fresh and new. They're looking for what's going to keep their business running.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the traditional bookstore is a very strange piece of work. They obviously are in business to sell books, and what sells is what is on the New York Times bestseller list. To get shelf space in the bricks and mortar world is pretty darn hard. I mean, the Boker company, which tracks everything to do with the publishing industry, I think they said there was something like 300,000 new titles in 2008.
Is that fiction and nonfiction?
I believe so, although yeah. I'm not sure it included the print-on-demand world, which would essentially more than double that number.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very large number.
It is a very large number, because I had heard 150, but I think that might have just been fiction.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. It was. I believe the exact number was 292,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
No wonder it's so hard.
Indeed. Looking at Accidentally Engaged and Sunnyside Blues, which created the biggest challenge for you, I've been told numerous times that humor is a tremendously hard genre to pull off correctly. Yet, I can hardly imagine that playing in the dark side as you do in Sunnyside Blues was much of a cakewalk either.
Yeah, I think my natural bent is humor. So even Sunnyside Blues has some humor in it, some dark humor in it. She'll Take It definitely had dark humor in it. And Accidentally Engaged was then, like you said, more of a romp, more of a farce. For me, the humor is easier, and I think it's my training as an actress. I was in improv comedy for years. And I think I just have that ear for comedy, and I don't really have to, it's not that I don't work at the book, but it just comes more naturally, writing humor than it did. Actually, Sunnyside Blues was a harder book for me to write. It took more research, and more sitting down and really getting past the first level of character until you have a well-rounded, developed person that has conflicting emotions and feelings and needs. So I think, and I think, I couldn't write a book without humor in it because it's just part of who I am and it comes out. And I think every book needs that humor, needs that release. But for me, I think my progression as a writer will be playing with that mix of, you know, the line between humor and then more serious subjects and how humor is used and woven in there. I definitely think you have to have an ear for it. And if you don't have an ear for it, it can be learned, it can be trained. But I think I just naturally have that humor bent in me.
I'm not so sure I would agree with you. I think there are some people that are naturally humorous and can find humor in almost anything. The people that are trained to do it, I always find the humor to be more forced. But I could be wrong.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't expect you to name names, but it's a pretty popular thing in the book world to base characters on real people. Well, at least some of their traits. Are there some real people to be found in Sunnyside Blues?
I think this is one of the fears that most fiction writers have, and probably nonfiction, except nonfiction writers can't hide, and you know, because they're basing it on obvious real people. The answer is yes, of course, but it's never just one person, and that's the fear, is that someone will read it and say, "Oh God, she wrote me on the page." But it's really a mix of people. You know, this character might have a little bit of this uncle I know, or a little bit of this friend I know. Or a story I've heard. But it's the same kind of thought as, you know, figuring out the plot, is that by the time it's done, they become their own person. So in order to kickstart me, I had to draw upon people I know, definitely, including myself. You know, I think part of yourself as a writer comes out in every character, whether you want it to or not. So the answer is definitely yes, but for the people, you know, out there worried, you know, what if my mother sees herself or et cetera, you really can't think of that when you're writing, and the characters will become their own person. And I also, you know, and then sometimes it's the opposite. I remember reading Neil Simon, the playwright's autobiography on writing is rewriting, and he had that fear when he wrote his first play. He's like, oh, my God, my uncle is going to hate me. He's going to recognize himself. But you just change a little bit here, you know, instead of this profession, they have that profession. And the funny thing was, is his uncle came to the play and said, I couldn't believe that uncle character. Could you believe that uncle character? And didn't see himself in it at all, you know, lucky for Neil Simon. And then sometimes I'll have the opposite. I'll have people say, oh, I know you based that character on so-and-so. And it couldn't be further from the truth. So I think people read into it what they want to read into it. But I think a writer is always going to draw upon, you know, a mixture of who they know and what they know to put into their characters and their stories. But it just fascinates me. People love with fiction, especially friends of mine. They just, their favorite game is, I know where you came up with that. And, you know, it boggles my mind that people are so fascinated about that. I guess because I'd rather not share all those things. And that's, you know, they sense that. So that's the first thing that they want to know. But you know, in the end, I can always say, look, it's fiction. It's a work of fiction. It comes directly from my crazy mind. So
right.
They can't say anything about that.
a book is a huge commitment. Time, energy, frustration. Are you a disciplined writer? You know, as in, do you block off a period of time each day, almost like going to work, you know, clocking in? Or do you just write when the ideas come to you?
Well, I have a few things to say. One is, I think writing a book is probably like having a child, where they say if you remember how painful it was, you would never do it again. And then somehow the pain goes away and you find yourself writing another one and doing another one. I'm a disciplined writer because I have to be, because I have a deadline. I would probably get lazy if I didn't have a deadline looming. So it's really good for me to say, oh, this book is due. I usually get about 9 months before they want me to hand in a draft to them, and then the revision process will go back and forth between my editor and I for another couple months, and then by the time the book is done and dusted and getting printed up, it's another year before it even comes out, so it's kind of a long process. I write pretty much 5 days a week, 7 days a week when it gets closer to the deadline. And, yeah, I discipline myself. I also have a day job. I'm not able to support myself just writing, so I have to write around my work schedule. And I work freelance, so my hours vary. Sometimes I'm dragging, you know, my laptop with me on the subway and writing in between jobs. Sometimes I write in the morning, at night. So I don't have a – I'm not one of these writers who I get up at 5 a.m. and write till 8 a.m. I pretty much just write whenever I can, but I'm at it every day or I lose touch with it. And sometimes I've tried, like, oh, I give myself a word count. I'll write 2,000 words today. And that can be really helpful because you know when you'll start and when you're finished. And other times I just say, look, I just have to progress this story a little bit further and then I'll be done. Usually about 4 hours is all I can write in a day, though. And then the rest of the time might be spent with, if I have all day to write, the rest of the time would be spent with research or, you know, cleaning up or stuff like that.
A journalist friend and I are actually toying with co-writing a nonfiction book. In fact, we even have a publisher that's interested, which is an absolute miracle all by itself. I know that if we move forward on this project, we're going to have to face the dreaded editor. I've read so many books and reviewed so many books that I can tell who's been naughty and skipped the vital step of avoiding the editor. And basically, it's the death knell for a book. You know, editors are professional. Yet now I find that the shoe's on the other foot, and I'm not so sure how much I'm going to like someone hacking my stuff around. What's your views on the process? Is it adversarial, or do you get along well with your editor?
Luckily, I have a great relationship with my editor, and I think the key there is trust. And as long as you truly trust that your editor wants you to have the best book you can have and is able to see things objectively, that you get so close to your material when you're working on it that it's impossible for you to catch your own mistakes and places where it might be confusing to the reader because it's so clear in your head. You know, they're definitely an ally, and your editor's on your side, and they're there to make your book as you know, good as that can be. So I look at it as a total gift, and I'm, you know, thankful to have that. And I have a great relationship with my editor, so I'm lucky there, too.
You mentioned earlier that that there's another book in the process. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. My book that comes out next summer, 2010, is called My Sister's Voice. It's about twin sisters, one deaf and one hearing, but they are separated when they're 3 years old, so they don't even know of each other's existence until they're 28. And so the book is about them trying to rediscover each other and find out why they were separated.
So this, once again, is going to be a fairly serious book.
Yes, this again, you know, I think, you know, for now I'm definitely in the category and the genre of women's fiction, and from here on out my books will be more of serious topics, you know, mixed with humor. I do have a novella coming out in August in a collection called Almost Home, and it's pure just romantic comedy. My portion's called The Honeymoon House, about 120 pages, and that was fun to write just to have a break from the more serious stuff. So I may have, you know, a few novellas in between my more serious novels that'll be coming out.
Right. And presumably in this day and age, I mean, no author would be complete without an internet site. What's your internet site?
My internet site is marycarterbooks.com, and in fact you can now go, and if you sign up you can win a signed copy of Sunnyside Blues. I'll be doing that drawing August 1st. So if you'd like to try to win a copy, you have until August 1st at marycarterbooks.com.
Okay, so there you go, listeners. There's a way you can snag a copy free. Mary, our time, alas, is just about up. I want to thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and I'm sure I talk for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you every success with Sunnyside Blues, and indeed your new project and your older projects. I'm sure that we're going to be hearing much more from you in the future.
Well, great. Thank you very much, and I look forward to your coming project as well. So, and everybody out there working on their own, good luck. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mary Carter, thank you so much. This is Simon Barrett saying good afternoon to all of our listeners, and we'll be back again soon with another show. Goodbye.